Hey everyone, my name is Bob Chappelle. I serve as the Chief Operating Officer at the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you all for joining us. We know these are challenging times and that you're working hard to manage your way through this crisis. We're working to provide you the information and resources that will help you through today's challenges. We have a large number of calls today, so this is a muted call, but we will take your questions by email. If you'll simply email me at bob@mobilechamber.com, I'll keep an eye out for your questions and we'll share those with our guests. There's a recording of today's call and it will be posted later today on the Chamber's social media channels, so you'll have an opportunity to re-listen or share as you would like to. We're joined today by two guests, both with Wilkins Miller, a full-service accounting firm with an expert team of certified accountants, business analysts, consultants, and advisors. Brandy Morgan is a certified public accountant and partner with Wilkins Miller. Brandy manages the firm's outsourced accounting services team and helps companies identify pain points and achieve their goals. Her primary industry expertise is in professional services, nonprofit, real estate, and construction. Brandy is leading the firm's CARES Act response team. Also with us today is Frank Brown, a CPA and partner with Wilkins Miller. He served as the firm's tax director for over 25 years and as a national instructor, author, and lecturer on tax law and planning. Frank's work focuses on financial consulting, income and estate tax planning, general business consulting, and auditing. Brandy and Frank, welcome and thank you for joining us. We're going to turn this over to you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob. Good morning, everyone. We are aware that many people in our city are dealing with matters that are much more important than these, and our prayers are with them. If you're listening, we hope you're well, and we pray that you continue well and stay safe. There are advantages to being a senior member of the firm, and one of them is that I get to speak about good news and less complex topics. Just a reminder, I'm sure you all are aware that the tax filing deadline has been extended from April 15 to July 15 for any income tax returns that were due April 15. Recently, the IRS added gift tax returns to that, so we no longer have to file an extension request for gift tax returns. They are also extended to July 15. The state of Alabama has followed the federal guidance, and so the returns are also due, the income tax returns are also due for the state of Alabama on July 15. We continue to look for relief for the second quarter estimate payment, which is due June 15. There has been no guidance or relief issued yet from the IRS, so at the minute we're planning to pay the second quarter estimate payment on June 15. However, we're still hoping for relief. Since the income tax return due date has been extended, we also have until July 15 to make an individual retirement account contribution for the year 2019. The extension also extends the time if you have a health savings account, you can make a contribution to those accounts also by July 15 for the year 2019. Another bit of good news is the IRS is generally not starting new examinations until July the 15th. They're trying to limit contact with taxpayers, of course, or with in the public. So generally the IRS will not be starting new examinations until July 15th is the guidance we've gotten from the IRS. Also, you could be in a situation for C Corp that you have a return due May 15. If that is the case, we still don't have any relief for any fiscal year taxpayers having an income tax return due May 15. So there may be, or we're hoping to get guidance on that, but as of now, any return with a due date, income tax return with a due date of May 15 continues to be due on that date. So that's the easy part out of the way. Brandy will now talk a little bit about the more complex areas, starting with the payroll tax credits.
Thank you, Frank. there is a lot of information that's come through recently, first with the Families First Coronavirus Response Act and more recently the CARES Act. So let's look at the Families First Coronavirus Response Act first. There are two specific provisions in there we wanted to make sure everyone is aware of. The Act now requires employers to pay emergency paid sick leave as well as emergency family medical leave if they have employees that have covered circumstances related to the coronavirus. So starting on April the 1st, emergency sick pay must be paid out to full-time employees up to 80 hours at their regular rate of pay, up to $511 per day. And that applies if the employee was subject to a quarantine or isolation order by a healthcare professional, or if they are experiencing symptoms of COVID-19 and seeking a medical diagnosis. So in those two situations, they need to be paid at their full rate of pay, again, up to $511 per day. Now, if the employee is having to miss work because they are caring for an individual that is subject to a quarantine, or they have a son or daughter whose school has been closed and they have to be at home to care for them and they have no other child care available, they have to be paid at two-thirds their rate of pay, up to $200 per day. And again, that started April the 1st. Now, to offset that, the Act also provided for two payroll tax credits, the first being the paid sick leave credit. And this credit is claimed on the Form 941, which is filed every quarter, and it allows for a 100% reimbursement of any wages that have to be paid out in accordance with this Act. And so in the event of the employee that's having to care for someone, that is $200 per day, or their two-thirds their regular rate of pay, whichever is less, or for the employee's own condition where they are sick or in isolation, the credit is up to $511 per day. And in addition, if there is health care coverage that is maintained for that employee, that can also be added to the credit as well. So the intent of this credit is to make the employer whole if they are having to pay employees during this time. And again, that's just 80 hours. That's 2 weeks of pay that would have to be paid out. Now, the Family Medical Leave Act, that provides for an additional 10 weeks of job-protected paid leave, and that applies if the employee is having to be to stay at home to care for their child during coronavirus because the school has been closed down and they have no one else to watch after their child. So the credit applies the same way. The pay in that instance, again, is two-thirds of the employee's regular rate of pay, up to $200 per day. So that credit can be claimed on the Form 941 as well. Now, since this went into effect April the 1st, that 941 would not be filed until July, but employers can immediately take advantage of these credits by adjusting their payroll tax deposits, the Form 941 tax deposit to be exact, to go ahead and reduce the deposit and take advantage of that credit now to provide for the cash flow needed to pay for those particular wages. Now, this also applies to self-employed individuals. So if you're a self-employed individual and not able to work for one of these covered reasons, you can take a credit for the lesser of $200 per day or 67% of your average daily self-employment income, and that's defined as your net earnings for the taxable year divided by 260. And you can take advantage of that by reducing your quarterly estimated tax payments now, and the credit will ultimately be claimed when you file your 1040 next year for 2020. All right, let's shift gears real quick to the unemployment compensation. This is actually part of the CARES Act, and the CARES Act provided for an expansion of unemployment benefits over and above what the state provides. And essentially, any individual that cannot work due to COVID-19 reasons can apply for unemployment benefits. That includes self-employed individuals, which has not previously been offered through state law. So if you are self-employed and you're not able to work due to COVID-19 reasons, you should be applying as well. Now, if an employee has the ability to telework or if they're able to receive PTO, then they cannot apply for unemployment. So those are really the two main exclusions there. But this act did increase the weekly benefit by $600, And Alabama's weekly benefit, currently the maximum is $275. So potentially an employee could receive up to $875 a week depending on their earnings history. So that's something to keep in mind if you're having to lay off workers or if you're not able to work because of COVID-19. All right, the next piece in the CARES Act that's actually been a hot topic the past week is the Paycheck Protection Program. And this is a loan program that was rolled out in the CARES Act for eligible small business concerns. And that's for businesses with less than 500 employees or the applicable SBA employee-based size standard for that industry. And those small businesses, the owners need to certify that the current economic uncertainty would make the loan request necessary to support ongoing operations of the business. So, you know, most businesses are being impacted right now because they're having to close or they're not able to work as they normally would, and so this is applying to a lot of businesses right now. And it also includes 501c3 nonprofits as well, so keep that in mind. The applications opened up last Friday for small businesses and sole proprietors, and it will open up this Friday on April the 10th for independent contractors and self-employed individuals. And essentially, the loan is based on a business's average monthly payroll cost, and that includes not only gross wages, but also health insurance premiums, retirement benefits, and state unemployment taxes. Now, employee compensation is capped at $100,000 for the year, as well as self-employed individuals who are also eligible to apply. Their income is capped at $100,000. But you come up with your average monthly payroll cost for the year, multiply that times 2.5, and that gives you your maximum loan amount that you can apply for. The proceeds are to be used for payroll costs, mortgage interest, rent, utilities, and other interests, but not more than 25% of those funds can be used for non-payroll costs. And we'll get to that in a minute as to why that is. The loan has a 2-year maturity with an interest rate at 1%, no collateral or personal guarantees, and there's a payment deferment for 6 months with that loan, and there's no prepayment penalty. The funds that have been made available for the Paycheck Protection Program is $349 billion. And based on the number of businesses that have been impacted, those funds are expected to go very quickly, and banks are working around the clock trying to get their portal set up and get applications into the SBA so that their clients can start to receive their funding. Now, the great thing about the Paycheck Protection Program is that that loan has the potential to be forgiven. So starting with the date that you receive the loan, a clock starts for 8 weeks where you use the funds, again, for payroll costs, mortgage interest, rent, utilities, and other interest. And to the extent that you use the cost appropriately or the funds appropriately, then you can request loan forgiveness for that debt, and you don't have to repay it. You would have to submit documentation to support all of those costs, and again, your non-payroll costs cannot exceed 25% of the funds. Also, the purpose of this loan is ultimately to keep employees on the payroll. And so one of the other things that the bank is going to look at is, did your full-time employee headcount stay the same? If it decreased, then there's going to be a reduction in the loan forgiveness. If your wages decrease by more than 25%, there could also be a reduction in the loan forgiveness. Now, if you've had to lay off workers up to this point and you get the Paycheck Protection loan, you know, in the next week or so, you can actually rehire those employees and not be penalized. And you actually have until June 30th to restore full-time employment and salary levels for changes that were made between February 15th and April the 26th. So there is a correctional period in there where you can avoid having the loan forgiveness reduced. Excuse me. I think that's it for the Paycheck Protection Program. I'm going to actually turn it back over to Frank to talk about some of the new income tax provisions that are in the CARES Act as well.
Thank you, Brandy. And just a couple of thoughts on that Paycheck Protection Program. I read an article that something along the lines, if we can put a man on the moon, can't we describe gross salary in a way that can be understood by bankers and lawyers and accountants? So the details of that were changing almost hourly, and I can imagine the complexities Brandy mentioned that with the forgiveness aspect of it, the June deadline to rehire, how that's all going to work. Guidance is coming. They supposedly will be within 30 days of the enactment, which was March 27, I believe. So that is, the details are yet to come, but our thought is to go ahead and apply, and even if we have to repay, the interest rate's favorable, there's no origination fee, et cetera. So the details continue to be worked out. As Brandy mentioned, as part of the CARES Act, there are quite a few items impacting individuals and businesses on the income tax side. The one that gets the most press seems to be the recovery rebates. But be aware that if you file a joint income tax return and you have over $150,000 in adjusted gross income, the rebate will begin to be phased out, and at right at $198,000 for a married filing joint, if you had that much in gross income, you would not get any rebate. They look at the 2018 return if you have not filed 2019 when they get ready to process these rebates. If you have filed 2019, they will look at the gross income on 2019. And I understand that when you file your 2020 return, if you qualify for a rebate based on your adjusted gross income at that time and you have not received one, they will send you one. But if you don't qualify in 2020 and they have already sent it to you, you don't have to pay it back. That's the general understanding with those rebates. One of the areas that is getting some relief is in the retirement plan area. If you're over 70 and a half, generally, some people 72 under the new law, you have to take a required minimum distribution every year, but that requirement is being waived for 2020. So if you have the wherewithal to not need a required minimum distribution from your retirement plan, it is the need for that is, or the requirement for that is waived for 2020. There's also a provision that waives the 10% penalty for anyone under age 59 and a half and withdraws up to $100,000 from their plan for coronavirus-related distribution. So if you have a situation and need to access those funds, that penalty is waived, and also the income tax is not waived. However, you would have 3 years to pay that, the income tax. Charitable contributions, the limitations are loosened significantly for 2020. For individuals, rather than a 60% limit or 50-50 depending, it's 100% generally, so it's virtually unlimited for individuals. Corporations who usually have a 10% limit have a 25% limit, so and if up to $300 in charitable contribution can be deducted even if you're not itemizing deductions. So you can add it to your standard deduction. Some of the changes effectively repeal some of the 12/31/17 or December 17 Act. That act eliminated the ability of a business to carry back a net operating loss, a business or an individual to carry back a business operating loss. So for retroactively for 18, for 19, and for 20, you can carry a business net operating loss back. And the business interest expense limitation that was brought in with the 2017 law, the deductibility of business interest has been loosened, not back to unlimited the way it generally was before, but there is a loosening of that restriction for 2019 and 2020. Another correction of that 17 Act is the qualified improvement property. It's known as the retail glitch. And those taxpayers that had qualified leasehold improvements and restaurant improvement property can generally now write that off over 15 years rather than 39 years. effective back to January 1st, 2018. We're waiting on a little more details about how exactly to make that calculate or how to report that to the IRS, whether it's an amended return, whether it has, we can catch it up in the current year. We don't know the details of that yet, but there is a nice benefit for those in that situation. Okay, those are the highlights of the income tax changes. Brandy, back to you, if you would, tell us about employee retention credits.
Yes, Frank. So I talked about the Paycheck Protection Program, which is a great opportunity for businesses to, you know, get additional funding that can be forgiven to help get through this time. But for those businesses that are not able to receive any funding because, you know, perhaps it runs out before you can apply, or maybe you're just not eligible based on your situation, there are other provisions available for you, the first being the Employee Retention Credit. And this is available to businesses that were in operation in 2020. Those operations were fully or partially suspended due to orders from a governmental authority, or you just had a significant decline in gross receipts where your gross receipts went below 50% or more from when compared to the same quarter in the prior year. And so if that happens and you're continuing to pay your employees, then you can take a payroll tax credit equal to 50% of the qualified wages that you pay, up to $10,000 per employee during 2020. If you have more than 100 employees, those qualified wages are going to be what you pay to employees that are not currently performing services due to a full or partial closure, but you are continuing to pay them. If you, that you paid during this time, if you've had that significant decline in gross receipts, again, if you drop below 50% of where you were the same time last year. If you had wages that you're using for the sick leave credit or the family medical leave credit that I previously mentioned, you can't use those same wages again. So there is no double dipping, but to the extent that you're not taking any other credits, then you could be eligible. And you can include the cost to maintain group health plan coverage for those employees that's eligible to those wages. Excuse me. Now, you can't pay your employees more during this time than you normally would in order to take that credit. So you have to keep them at the same level of wages as what they were previously making. But that is a great credit that you can take advantage of. And, again, you can adjust your payroll tax deposits on for Form 941 to take advantage of that now versus waiting until you file at the end of the quarter. The other payroll option that is available to help with cash flow is the payroll tax deferral piece that came out. Now, this does not apply to taxpayers that receive debt forgiveness from the Paycheck Protection Program, so keep that in mind. But to the extent that you were not participating in that, 50% of the tax that's imposed for FICA can be deferred, and that is the 6.2% employer match that I'm referring to. The employer has to match a total of 7.65% on wages paid to employees. So the 6.2% refers to the FICA portion. And so to the extent that you can or need to for 2020, you can defer that match with half of that being due by the end of 2021 and the other half due by the end of 2022. So it's essentially an interest-free loan from the government to postpone paying the 6.2% match for wages that are paid. But again, if you're in the Paycheck Protection Program and you've got debt forgiveness from that, you will not be able to take advantage of that piece. Well, Bob, I think that wraps up our recap. We've touched on really the high points with the Families First Coronavirus Response Act and the CARES Act. So as you've heard, there's several provisions available for businesses and for employees to help during this difficult time until we can get on the other side of this. So we would encourage businesses, if you've not already done so, we recommend that you reach out to your accountant, talk with your HR consultant, your banker, explore what your options are, and determine what makes sense for your business.
Brandy, that's great advice, and we thank you and Frank for sharing the vital information that you have today. Some of our listeners may have questions and want to reach you. Would the easiest way to do that be through perhaps WilkinsMiller.com?
You you can go there, or our office number is 410-6700. So if you're interested in partnering with Wilkins Miller, we'd love to hear from you and have those discussions.
Great. Well, we thank you both again for your time today and for sharing the information that you have. Our guests have been Brandy Morgan and Frank Brown with Wilkins Miller. This call was recorded and will be posted to the Chamber's social media channels later today. A reminder, you will find the latest resources and assistance related to COVID-19 on the Chamber's website. That's mobilechamber.com. Tomorrow's call will feature Dr. Reggie Sykes, the president of Bishop State Community College. Thank you for calling today and for your membership in the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. Be safe and be well.